So it's the 6th of August today, and I'm going to be, I'm at Joan Beck's house, Joan Peck, Therese Sweeney's my name. Anyway, I'll just get your full name.
Joan Claire Peck.
And what's your address, Joan?
27 Cow Pasture Road, Leppington.
And what year were you born?
I was born in 1927, August 1927.
Where were you born?
I was born in Liverpool, the top end of Liverpool. There was a nurse up at the top end of Liverpool, had actually I think she was a midwife, and the mothers used to go there and have their babies there.
And what are your parents' names?
My father's name was Martin Mulhall. My mother's name was Gertrude Mulhall. And she's a descendant from the Adams from Narellan, and my grandmother was a shaman from the Jimmy Shaman lot. So,
and your father?
He came from Inverell or up that way somewhere. He used to talk about Dorrigo and all those places up in the country up there. So, not that I never went up there.
And how many siblings?
I had got one sister, two half-brothers, and three half-sisters. What do you call them, half-sisters or stepsisters? But I have only one left now, and she'd be 96 this November, and her name's Kathleen.
And your husband's name?
His name was Barrington Peck.
He died?
He died on the 24th of July 1999. We were married, 51 years.
So we'll catch up with that during the course of our conversation. So, what are some of your earliest memories as a young girl?
Well, when we first came out here, I was 10 years of age. And it was a terrible shock to see coming into the house that we were going into, because we came from a big house in Liverpool in Norfolk Street, and it had about 5 or 6 bedrooms in it. Enormous big house. We came out here on the back of an old wobbly old truck to Leppington, Byron Road, Leppington, to a house that stood on cut off tree stumps and no windows or doors that closed properly. Dirt floor on the back where it was supposed to be the bathroom, but it was a laundry bathroom combined. So, but actually it wasn't a laundry then, it was built later on because Mum used to wash out in the outside with the tubs and a kerosene bucket on a fire to boil the clothes, and we used to have our baths in the tubs after she finished doing the washing, so that was our bath time. So
can you remember the journey on the truck to get here?
Well, I remember coming to the top of the hill where the Northies are over there, and coming down the hill with these great big ruts in the roads, enormous big ruts. You wonder where the wheels of the truck were going to, you know, come off in the ruts. But and the place, I believe, just before we'd bought it, people by the name of Alec Northey owned it, and they had the auction there, and there was so many fleas there at the time that you couldn't see the auctioneer's collar for the fleas that was on the collar before we bought the place. Everybody always remarked about that. So my dad had to get a lend of £100 off his brother that had a newsagent at Randwick to buy the money to buy the house, because it was in the Depression and he had been a butcher in Liverpool at Ashcross Butchery. And he got put off, and then he'd get a day at Pierce's at the butcher's there, and then with the small goods and that, he'd get a day here and a day there. So we were paying rent in this big house there, so decided we'd come out here. So we came out here, and they started a pig farm out there. And they used to get calls from the councils and that to come up and pick up the animals that had been hit on the road to take them home. And they had these great big boilers up there in the shed. They used to boil them all down, the dead animals, to feed to the pigs and that. So there was no water on those days. It's just dams, so...
I'll just stop you there for a minute. So do you remember, so how much was the house?
£100.
It was £100. Mm. It wasn't the deposit, it was the price.
That was the price, yeah.
So it was on, was it a fibre or was it?
No, it was made out of every bit of scrap of timber that you could buy out of it. So a bit of galvanised iron, a bit of, it was lined with an old dartboard, some of it, you know, like drafts in places like that. It was a real wreck of a place, you know. So
that would have been a work in progress. How long were you in that house?
I was in that house till I married. So
I hope it improved for you.
No, it got worse, actually. It's the same. Until Barry came on the scene and he built Mum an indoor copper to boil the clothes and put the laundry tubs in the laundry for and things like that. Yet they did put a floor down too, so as we had a floor.
So we'll just get, sorry, back to your dad. So he started a piggery.
Piggery and a knackery.
A knackery.
Yeah.
So it was two things.
It was combined. You see the pigs, the food, the knackery.
Describe the piggery for me. Like, just think that who you're talking to has no idea what you're talking about.
A piggery, well... There was all these different yards and sties, and then we had opened the sties up out the back, and they had the run of the back paddock where they used to run around during the daytime. And when they had the young ones, they'd bring them into the sties so as that they'd be separated from the main big ones and that. So.
And what was the smell like?
Unbelievable. Terrible.
All the time?
All the time.
You've had quite a bit of trauma, Joe. I didn't know. How big was the property?
To 5 acres.
So it was the land that you paid the £100?
Well, the whole lot was £100, yeah.
So what do you do in a piggery? Do you grow pigs and eat them?
Okay, send them to market. See, they got the dead animals on the road, off the road, and they feed them on that or whatever feed you could get for them, like that. And then they decided to have the knackery. Well, they used to kill all these cows and calves and that, they'd get them at the markets of a Tuesday, bring them home, and they'd slaughter them that night, and someone had, I don't know who it was, would come and pick them up and take them away to the city somewhere, whether what they were into or not, I don't know, but we'd be up till 2 o'clock in the morning helping slaughter the calves and that. So, and then they decided that they'd go into the horses and build and buy the horses. And Dad opened some pet shops then, and they used to sell the horse meat to the pet shops. So
describe, how old were you when you were participating in the
10,
the
11, 10 and 11.
Now, tell me about what you do. Give me an example of, someone would bring, what, a cow?
A dead cow.
A dead cow that was hit by a truck, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. And that unloaded and... And my brother and father had dismantled it all and put it in the big coppers and boiled it all up and fed it to the animals, the pigs.
So what utensils would you use?
Kerosene buckets and knives and steels and everything like that. A steel to sharpen your knives and an axe to cut them down with and things like that. So.
And how did you learn to cut them?
I suppose... watching everybody else do them, I suppose. See, Dad was a butcher, a professional butcher.
Now I get it.
Yes, he was a professional butcher, and then my brother learned to learn his butchery trade off him too. So
those skills were obviously useful.
Yes.
And how did you feel doing it?
We just had to do it. It was part and part of it. Stay down the house on your own or being up in the sheds at the night time with them. Winter or summer wouldn't make any difference because Mum would be up there too. She'd be getting the wood for the coppers and that to keep the fires all going. So it was warmer up there than what was in the house at times.
So why would you do it of a night?
Well, when they come from the sales, it'll be late in the afternoon. And that you had nowhere to keep them all night. They'd probably die on you, and they wanted the live ones. Well, they'd want them fresh. They wouldn't want them dead. You know, they wouldn't buy dead animals to do anything with. So
the meat was better live?
Well, the better it was fresh, see? Fresh. They'd take them away fresh.
Right.
They'd hang them, kill them and hang them and skin them and hang them, and then they'd take them away fresh then, so... I don't know who took them. I can't remember who took them.
Anything that stands out for you? There's
oh, well, all the skin. Many. The skin. Traumatic? No, no. Well,
no, I'm sure there are many.
Yeah, yes.
Many memories.
Yes, there would be many memories. And, you know, we'd have all the hides all stacked up and they'd have to salt all the hides down, and we waited until we'd get, oh, I don't know how many hundred hides, and then they'd roll them up, sweep all the salt off them and roll them all up and take them to the tanneries in Sydney for the hides and that. Well,
can you remember how much money you got for things?
No, not really, no.
And how long would they have to sit in salt?
Oh, until they got enough to take away, see. They'd wait until they got a truckload to take away to the tanneries then.
What was some of the jargon, the language? Do you remember any? You just said the tannies then.
Well, I don't know about that, but
that were, was
Dad ended up by having quite a few men work for him, men that couldn't get jobs anywhere else. They came there and learned to pot around and learned a lot of things off Dad. So that we had a Mr. Northey that lived next door. He had 8 kids and he came there and... very handy man around the place, so he used to provide us with milk, and when they were had good, fresh calves, all of that, Dad would give him a beast to take home to cut up for himself, for their family and that, so, yes, and then anything, in the cows that they did, we would have good meat from the cows for ourselves to eat too, so... Then they went into the horses. I mean, they do perhaps 20 horses a day, every day, because they had these pet shops to supply for the meat. And they not only supplied our own, but they supplied other people that had the pet shops as well too. So,
where did you get the horses from?
They'd get them from everywhere, coming by truckloads from on the trains from Ingleburn, from Wodonga and all over the country, you know, real some Brumbies and goodness knows what. As I said in that little... Did you read my story in the paper? We used to have to bring them from Ingleburn over here by the men and drive horses, and we'd be on our push box and make sure everybody's gate was closed so they wouldn't get into their properties, because they'd got into the properties and be hours trying to get them out. So we'd bring them home and they'd come down the road, Bryan Road. We'd stand down the bottom of the gate so they'd go up the laneway and into the paddocks ready where there was feed and water waiting for them. So, and then they gradually killed them all, and another lot had come. And of course, Dad used to go to the sales, you know, all over the place. He'd go to Camden Tuesday, and he'd go to Parramatta Friday, Homebush Wednesdays. And they'd always get a truckload every time to bring home, so...
plenty of horses around.
There was a lot of horses around then too. We never had a garden at all over there because the horses would break the fences down. It was just a bare house in the middle of a paddock because the horses would trample the fences down all the time and get into your garden and things like that, so... Yes.
That's quite a landscape, isn't it?
It is, it is. Yeah, the dams, they got in the dams. You'd have to drag them out sometimes. They got bogged in the dams, and the boys and my brother and the men would have to drag them out of the dams with the trucks.
Was it exciting, interesting?
No, not... there was always something going on. I'd come home from school. Oh, this is jumping about a bit. But I'd come home from school at midday, because we had no water on at that stage, and had a big dam up the top of the property on top of the hill, and we'd bail the water out into the gutters. We'd have a gutter, and so as it run down into the yards for the pigs and things like that. So, but there was a, we had three dams on our property, but they weren't great big dams. But we had a tank for our own water. And, yes.
And what school did you go to? Tell me about starting school.
Well, I started school up here when we came out in the December of 1937 and started school, I think, towards... I might have been only there a few weeks before school broke up, and then it was the 38th, that's when we all had our photos taken.
Okay, so it's the 6th of August today, and I'm going to be... I'm at Joan Beck's house... Joan Peck. Therese Sweeney's my name. Anyway, I'll just get your full name.
Joan Claire Peck.
I'll just work out how I'm going to hold this properly. And what's your address, Joan?
27 Cow Pasture Road, Leppington.
And what year were you born?
I was born in 1927, August 1927.
Where were you born?
I was born in Liverpool, the top end of Liverpool. There was a nurse up in the top end of Liverpool, had I think she was a midwife, and the mothers used to go there and have their babies there.
And what are your parents' names?
My father's name was Martin Mulhall. My mother's name was Gertrude Mulhall. And she's a descendant from the Adams, from Narellan, and my grandmother was a shaman from the Jimmy Shaman lot. So,
and your father?
He came from Inverell or up that way somewhere. He used to talk about Dorico and all those places up in the country, up there. So, not that I never went up there.
And how many siblings?
I had got one sister, two half-brothers, and three half-sisters. What do you call them, half-sisters or stepsisters? But I have only one left now. She'll be 96 this November, and her name's Kathleen.
And your husband's name?
His name was Barrington Peck.
He died
on the 24th of July 1999. We were married 51 years.
So we'll catch up with that during the course of our conversation. So what are some of your earliest memories as a young girl?
Well, when we first came out here, I was 10 years of age. And it was a terrible shock to see coming into the house that we were going into, because we came from a big house in Liverpool in Norfolk Street, and it had about 5 or 6 bedrooms in it. Enormous big house. We came out here on the back of an old wobbly old truck to Leppington, Byron Road, Leppington, to a house that stood on cut off tree stumps and no windows or doors that closed properly, dirt floor on the back where was supposed to be the bathroom, but it was a laundry bathroom combined. So but actually it wasn't a laundry then, it was built later on, because Mum used to wash out in the outside with the tubs and a kerosene bucket on a fire to boil the clothes, and we used to have our baths in the tubs after she finished doing the washing. So that was our bath time. So
can you remember the journey on the truck to get here?
Well, I remember coming to the top of the hill where Northies are over there, and coming down the hill with these great big ruts in the roads, enormous big ruts. You wonder where the wheels of the truck were going to you know, come off in the ruts. But and the place, I believe, before, just before we bought it, people by the name of Alec Northey owned it, and they had the auction there, and there was so many fleas there at the time that you couldn't see the auctioneer's collar for the fleas that was on the collar before we bought the place. Everybody always remarked about that. So my dad had to get a lend of £100 off his brother that had a newsagent at Randwick to buy the money to buy the house, because he was in the Depression and he had been a butcher in Liverpool at Ashcross Butchery. And he got put off, and then he'd get a day at Pierce's at the butcher's there, and then he, and the small goods and that, he'd get a day here and a day there. So we were paying rent in this big house there, so decided we'd come out here. So we came out here, and they started a pig farm out there. And they used to get calls from the councils and that to come out and pick up the animals that had been hit on the road to take them home. And they had these great big boilers up there in the shed. They used to boil them all down, the dead animals, to feed to the pigs and that. So there was no water on those days. It was just dams, so...
Okay, I'll just stop you there for a minute. So do you remember, so how much was the house?
£100.
It was £100. Mm. It wasn't the deposit, it was the price.
That was the price, yeah.
So it was on, was it a fibro or was it?
No, it was made out of every bit of scrap of timber that you could buy out of it. So a bit of galvanised iron, a bit of, it was lined with an old dartboard, some of it, you know, like drafts in places like that. It was a real wreck of a place, you know. So
that would have been a work in progress. How long were you in that house?
I was in that house till I married. So
I hope it improved for you.
No, it got worse, actually. It's the same. Until Barry came on the scene, and he built Mum an indoor copper to boil the clothes and put the laundry tubs in the laundry for and things like that. Yet they did put a floor down too, so we had a floor.
So we'll just get, sorry, back to your dad. So he started a piggery.
Piggery and a knackery.
A knackery.
Yeah.
So it was two things.
It was combined. You see the pigs, the food, the knackery.
Describe the piggery for me. Like, just think that who you're talking to has no idea what you're talking about.
A piggery, well... There was all these different yards and styes, and then we had opened the styes up out the back, and they had the run of the back paddock where they used to run around during the daytime. And when they had their young ones, they'd bring them into the styes so as that they'd be separated from the main big ones and that. So.
And what was the smell like?
Unbelievable. Terrible.
All the time?
All the time.
You've had quite a bit of trauma, Joan, I didn't know. How big was the property? How many?
To 5 acres.
So it was the land that you paid the £100?
Well, the whole lot was £100, yeah.
So what do you do in a piggery? Do you grow pigs and eat them?
Okay, send them to market. See, they got the dead animals on the road, off the road, and they feed them on that or whatever feed you could get for them, like that. And then they decided to have the knackery. Well, they used to kill all these cows and calves and that, they'd get them at the markets of a Tuesday, bring them home, and they'd slaughter them that night, and someone, I don't know who it was, would come and pick them up and take them away to the city somewhere, whether what they were into or not, I don't know, but we'd be up till 2 o'clock in the morning helping slaughter the calves and that. So, and then they decided that they'd go into the horses and build and buy the horses. And Dad opened some pet shops then, and they used to sell the horse meat to the pet shops. So
describe, how old were you when you were participating in the
10,
the
11, 10 and 11.
Now, tell me about what you do. Give me an example of someone would bring, what, a cow?
A dead cow.
A dead cow that was hit by a truck, let's say.
Yeah, and that unloaded and... And my brother and father and dismantle it all and put it in the big coppers and boil it all up and feed it to the animals, the pigs.
So what utensils would you use?
Kerosene buckets and knives and steels and everything like that. A steel to sharpen your knives and an axe to cut them down with and things like that. So.
And how did you learn to cut them?
I suppose watching everybody else do them, I suppose. See, Dad was a butcher, a professional butcher.
Now I get it.
Yes, he was a professional butcher. And then my brother learned to learn his butchery trade off him too. So
those skills were obviously useful.
Yes.
And how did you feel doing it?
We just had to do it. It was part and part of it. Stay down in the house on your own or being up in the sheds at the night time with them. Winter or summer wouldn't make any difference because Mum would be up there too. She'd be getting the wood for the coppers and that to keep the fires all going. So it was warmer up there than what was in the house at times.
So why would you do it of a night?
Well, when they come from their sales, it'd be late in the afternoon. And then you had nowhere to keep them all night. They'd probably die on you and they wanted the live ones. Well, they'd want them fresh. They wouldn't want them dead. You know, they wouldn't buy dead animals to do anything with. So
the meat was better live?
Well, the better, it was fresh, see. They'd take them away fresh.
Right.
They'd hang them, kill them and hang them and skin them and hang them and then they'd take them away fresh then, so. I don't know who took them. I can't remember who took them.
Anything that stands out for you?
The skin. Traumatic? No, not well.
No, I'm sure there are many.
Yes.
Many memories.
Yes, there would be many memories. And, you know, we'd have all the hides all stacked up and they'd have to salt all the hides down and we waited until we'd get, I don't know how many hundred hides and then they'd roll them up, sweep all the salt off them and roll them all up and take them to the tanneries in Sydney for the hides and that.
Can you remember how much money you got for things?
No, not really, no.
And how long would they have to sit in salt?
Oh, and until they got enough to take away, see. They'd wait until they got a truckload to take away to the tanneries then.
What was some of the jargon, the language? Do you remember any? You just said the tannies then.
Well, I don't know about that, but
that were
Dad ended up by having quite a few men work for him. Men that couldn't get jobs anywhere else. They came there and learned to pot around and learned a lot of things off Dad. So that we had a Mr. Northey that lived next door. He had 8 kids and he came there and. Very handy man around the place, so he used to provide us with milk, and when they were had good fresh calves, all of that Dad would give him a beast to take home to cut up for himself for their family and that. So yes, and then anything in the cows that they did, we would have good meat from the cows for ourselves to eat too. So. Then they went into the horses. I mean, they do perhaps 20 horses a day, every day, because they had these pet shops to supply for the meat. And they not only supplied our own, but they supplied other people that had the pet shops as well too. So,
where did you get the horses from?
They'd get them from everywhere. Coming by truckloads on the trains from Ingleburn, from Wodonga and all over the country, you know, real some Brumbies and goodness knows what. As I said in that little, did you read my story in the paper? We used to have to bring them from Ingleburn over here by the men and drive horses and we'd be on our push box and make sure everybody's gate was closed so they wouldn't get into their properties because they'd gone to the properties and be hours trying to get them out. So we'd bring them home and they'd come down the road, Byron Road, we'd stand down the bottom of the gate so they'd go up the laneway and into the paddocks ready where there was feed and water waiting for them. So, and then they gradually killed them all and another lot had come. And of course, Dad used to go to the sales, you know, all over the place. He'd go to Camden Tuesday, and he'd go to Parramatta Friday, Homebush Wednesdays, and he'd always get a truckload every time to bring home. So, but
and so break. Plenty of horses around.
There was a lot of horses around then too. We never had a garden at all over there because the horses had break the fences down. It was just a bare house in the middle of a paddock because the horses would trample the fences down all the time and get into your garden and things like that. So, yes.
That's quite a landscape, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah, and the dams, they got in the dams. You'd have to drag them out sometimes. They got bogged in the dams, and the boys and my brother and the men would have to drag them out of the dams with the trucks. And,
Was it exciting? Interesting?
No, not. Oh, there was always something going on. I'd come home from school. This is jumping about a bit. But I'd come home from school at midday because we had no water on at that stage and had a big dam up the top of the property on top of the hill. And we'd bail the water out into the gutters. We'd have a gutter and so it'd run down into the yards for the pigs and things like that. So. But there was, we had three dams on that property, but they weren't great big dams. But we had a tank for our own water. And, yes.
And what school did you go to? Tell me about starting school.
Well, I started school up here when we came out in the December of 1937 and started school, I think, towards. I might have been only there a few weeks before school broke up, and then it was the 38th, that's when we all had our photos taken up there. First thing I met was Mrs. Barrett and Dulcie Teagle, who lived down the road, and the big toilets that was at the on top of the hill with the big holes underneath the toilets. They didn't have pans or anything like that, just had these great big holes. And I was short and fat, got to the top of the hill, and I had Dulcie Norley on one side and Pat on the other, and dragged me down the hill. I think the first few days I had all my knees all skinned because I couldn't keep up with them. But that was our school days, and we're still friends with a lot of those girls that we grew up with. There's not many left, but we still meet and talk and things like that. So we had one teacher. Mr. Mahon, and he had, I think there was 27, 28 or 29 kids at the school, and it was from first class through to sixth class. I started in fourth class there, and he used to ride a horse, a black mare, from Ingleburn. And Bonds Creek came up in Denham Court Road, he couldn't get through. And, of course, we used to play on the minute to start to rain. He wasn't there. We'd stand up on the top rail of the school to see if he was coming. If he wasn't coming, we'd all go home. Then when he come to school, he'd have to send someone home to come and get us to come back to school. So, and there was Jimmy Yeomans. He was a big boy down at school, and he used to stand up. He was as tall as the teacher, and he used to stand up to him all the time at school, Jimmy. So, and then there was some state school kids there from the lady across the road from the school. She used to work those kids something terrible. And they come to school with no shoes on their feet, socks, in rags in the winter. They were really
Who
bad.
Were these kids from where?
They were state school kids.
State
kids. Wards of the state.
Oh, okay.
Yes, wards of the state. And she used to look after them.
She was fostering them.
I don't know whether she was fostering them or what she was, but she worked them like the devil.
Labour. Slave labour.
That's right.
That must have been. Yeah, there's always something going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there always is. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about, I'm really interested in the house. Describing more of the house you grew up in. Like, how many rooms were there?
There's two bedrooms, a kitchen, and a lounge dining room type of thing with an open fireplace in it. And across the front was a veranda across the front and a veranda on the side that had no support. So you stepped on the veranda side, on the side veranda, you'd go up and down with the sway with the floor on it. And that was it.
So there was only one dirt floor?
The dirt floor, yes, was the laundry floor, or what they call the bathroom, I suppose, yeah.
And what sort of furniture did you have in there?
Well, we brought our furniture from Liverpool. We just had tables and chairs, and we had single beds for my sister and I. And then my brother had a single bed out in the front, on the veranda at the front, and Mum just had an ordinary bedroom suite that she brought from in there. We had a lounge suite in there, but we didn't have the room to put it out here, so we just bought the dining room tables and chairs, and that's all that we had, because there was no room to put a lounge chair anywhere in the place. So
there were small rooms.
Small rooms, yes.
You grew up during the war then, the Second World War.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything? Do you remember being aware that there was a war?
Oh, yes. I remember being aware. Mum's brothers were away. One was a rat of Tobruk. And one was in Malaysia, and it was a prisoner of war in Malaysia. So he used to write to me. They both used to write to me as pen friends, you know, and from Tobruk and from Malaysia, before he was taken prisoner of war, of course. But he came back from the war. They both came back from the war. So that was Mum's two brothers. Hmm.
What about in the local area here?
Oh, well, the local area, there was army camps around here everywhere. There was one in Denham Court, and of course there was Ingleburn, and then there was, do you know Denham Court? Well, you know, you go straight through and then turn the bend. Well, all through there was army camps everywhere, and up the other end, I can't tell sure whether they were up Raby Road as well too, but I think they were up Raby Road. No, not Raby Road. St Andrews Road. I think they were in there too, in the bushes there.
What did they look like, these army camps?
Tents, all tents. And lots of trucks and things. And there used to be a lot of army. They used to march up and down the roads here everywhere, you know, probably doing their drills and things like that. And they'd march from here to the out to Penrith and that way around Benjali Road, out that way. A friend of mine had a little shop on the corner there of Rickard Road and Benjali Road. They put up a little stall there, so when the soldiers were going past, they could get drinks and bits and pieces on that little, in that little stall over there. So, and they used to come to, we used to have the dances and the concerts down at the old tin hall, and they'd come down there for the dances and the concerts and things. So we got to know quite a few of them, some of the wonderful dances and things like that. So
what hall was that again?
The Leppington Hall.
The Leppington Hall. So that was the social hub of the area?
Yes, yes.
And what sort of concerts were put on there?
Well, there was a couple of ladies used to have just sing-song concerts, you know, a sing-along and a bit of a dance during the week, and then we'd have the dances on the Friday, Saturday nights. We'd have one week we'd go to Leppington, another week we'd have Rossmore, and then we'd have Austral, and then there was Ludnam. So it turned all around. My dad was the MC for the ones at Leppington Hall, and sometimes you'd be packed, the hall would be packed with the soldiers. So it was all the local girls. You know, I had plenty of partners, so we all learned to dance very quickly. Mm.
And what were some of the songs they used to sing?
Oh, they're all old-time dances.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the songs that they sang, but as I told in that other interview, that we used to get on the back of a truck. We didn't have cars to travel down, and we'd get on the back of a truck in our ball gowns, because mostly we wore long dresses in those days for the dances. And we'd get on there all rugged up and to keep warm, because we'd have to stand up and hang on. And we'd go to the dances, and then on the way home we'd be singing Goodnight Irene. It was our theme song, we thought, you know, and we'd sing up there at the top of our voices all the way home. There might have been half a dozen, might have been a dozen of us on the back of the truck, boys and girls, going to and from the dances. But and there was no drink much in those days at the dances, unless the boys might have had a bottle out at the car that they might go out in between dances and have a little bit and come back in, but not like the drink of today.
It was just natural joy.
Yeah, it was.
And so you, where did your mother make your dress, or did you buy your dresses? How did you source your outfits?
No, my auntie used to make our dresses. My mum's sister was a dressmaker, and she made them. Mum did used to sew, but she used to sew our, mostly in those days we wore tartan skirts and they all had a bodice on them, you know. And if you grew out of the bodice, they'd put a new bodice on and just add the tartan skirts down to make them last a lot longer. But she used to make those, but I can't remember making this, any dresses, I don't think so.
I'm just trying to think. So that was quite well organised, really, all those halls.
Oh, yes,
in the area,
yes,
because
yes.
It wouldn't have been very populated, the area.
No, no, the same people run it all the time, you know.
So that was good, wasn't it? So who were some of the families that were kind of prominent back then that you...
Well, there was the Northies, the Maloneys, the Wilds, and the Coxes, and who else can I think of? The Masterfields, and the Atkinsons, no. They didn't want the dancers. No, that was about all of them that I can remember from this end, anyway. Yeah.
And do you remember when the migrant men and women started attending the dances?
Yes, they were good dancers too. Yes, I'm Tony Balovich. He was one of those that used to come there. And the Serovich for later, Gergovich's, and they had the carrying business in the area. They pick up all the crops around the area and take them to markets and things like that.
So you were at the property. What schooling did you go to?
I went to sixth class, and because there was only one bus in of a morning, I think it was the mail cart actually used to go in the morning, and you'd leave at 7 o'clock and get back at 7, so I wasn't allowed to go to high school. I passed, in those days there was two high schools. There was one at Homebush and one at Parramatta, and the highest one was Parramatta, and I passed to go to Parramatta, but I wasn't allowed to go. So we were supposed to do correspondence call on the back side for Andrew at the school. So I did that for 2 years till I was 14. We're allowed to leave school at 14, so we left school when I was old enough to do. But in the meantime, I'd be at, I'd attend school every day, but I had so many other chores to do at home, because I start to cook for all the men when I was about 12. I used to have to cook their breakfast, dinner and tea with the help of Mum then. But then as I got a bit older, she used to start to go to the sales with Dad to get away from the place, and I had to do have a hot meal in the middle of the day, and I'd be cleaning up, washing up of an after, about 2:30 after they'd finished. They wouldn't come down for lunch until they'd finished killing, because then they cleaned themselves up to come and have their meal. And then by the time I was washing up, it might be 3 o'clock, and I was also preparing the tea for them at the same time. So we only had a fuel stove in those days too. So
you've mentioned, just go over a regular day. So what, describe to me what a day was like for you back then.
The men would arrive about 6 o'clock, and Dad would be up, and he'd have a cup of tea, and they'd have a cup of tea and biscuits with him. And then after they'd gone out, after having that, we'd get up and we'd prepare breakfast for them, and we'd cook them bacon and eggs, or steak and eggs, or whatever was there for them. And they'd have their breakfast, away they'd go. up to do the work up to it. Then about 10:30, we'd take up a big bucket, big billy can of tea and biscuits for them, or sayos and cheese and things like that. And then they'd be still working, and we'd come down and clean up that mess. And then we'd just cook a meal. We'd have braised steak or stews or curries and vegetables with it. And we'd clean that up again and prepare something for tea as well at the same time. And you'd be making scones and that in between for them if they were going to be there all day. Or we'd make scones in the morning for them for morning tea, whatever, what time we had to do those sort of things. Then they'd come home at tea. It might be 7 o'clock at night before they had the tea. And then we'd clean up and go and sit by the fire for a few minutes inside to listen to the radio. Then we'd go to bed, have a wash and go to bed. You didn't always have a bath every night, that's for sure, because it was too much of an effort. You'd have a good wash and that was about it. So
where did you get your supplies from for your scone, your flour and your sugar?
We used to have a grocer come down, Ernie Askew. Used to have it from Rossmore, and he used to deliver our groceries round to us. But Mum used to go, when Dad, she was out with Dad, like, they'd go to the grocery shop in Liverpool, the top end of Main Street in Liverpool. There was Goodlands were there, and there was Weavers down the bottom end of the street too, and they'd do a grocery shop there too until they decided that Ernie Askew was delivering them, so...
And you had your own eggs, did you? Or did you?
Oh, yes. We had a few fowls there. They used to be running around. You'd have to go and find the eggs somewhere. There was no proper fowl yard for them in those days. They didn't have anything like that. You did, the horses would trample them down. So they'd have the chooks. There'd be free range all around the place. So. And perhaps Mr. Northey might have had some. And there was an old man down the road called Mr. Thomas, old Tomo, he used to bring our eggs up. He was a very old man, very feeble, but he worked up there for years for Dad. He was a dirty old man, you know. Trousers held up with a rope and God knows what. He ended up by dying. Dad found him dead in his old hut down the end of Byron Road many years after he'd been there a long time. Dad found him dead in the hut.
So it was pretty rough on the land, obviously, with all the horses. And yeah. You didn't have anything growing, really, except yourselves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, fascinating, really. Like, it just sounds, you know, quite, you know, you really were isolated here, I would imagine, from... Well, I suppose was it all like that? Did you ever go to the city?
I had a sister living at Mascot, and occasionally Dad would send me down there. When she was expecting a baby, he'd send me down there to look after, help her out for a while, you know, do all the cooking, because my two sisters live with my other sister and her husband. So he'd send me down there for a fortnight to look after, cook for all them, while she was having the baby, to the tail end until she first came home. Then I'd come back to the land. But I used to go to the city, yes, because all the stuff that off the from the knackery, like the hides, and there was the bones that they used to go and send them into the city. They used to, the bones and the hoofs and things like that, and the hides, I'd have to go in and get the money from them from the city, pick up the check and things like that. So I knew my way around the city, yeah. Yeah. And then Dad decided I could go and leave out there and go and learn a trade. I learned hairdressing. And I was almost through ready for exams, and he brought me back home again to come back and help at home. And I think I went back... No, that's right. I was at the stage when I was going out from the hairdressing college to the shops on the weekend and working for the people in the shops and that. So, and I was nearly finished my trade, and he brought me home then, so no more of that. You had a good time in the city, because we go in by train. We go to the college and we go and have lunch somewhere, and then come home at night time. A lot of travelling, catch the steam train at Liverpool, get off at Strathfield, run down the ramps and catch the electric trains into the city and that. So I come home and he said, right, he said, you're staying home now. And I said, no, I'm not. He said, well, I'm going to put you in one of the shops, some of the shops that he'd opened. So we went into the shops and I'd just get one nearly ready to support a man, and he'd get a manager in for the shop and give that shop to another, to the man. So this happened to three shops. In the last shop, I said, I'm not going out of there. This is my money this time. So I stayed in that shop then until...
When you say shop, what sort of shop?
Pet shop. You're selling all the horse meat and things like that. Yes. So
you stood up to him?
Yeah, stood up to him. No, I kept Bankstown for myself. It was in Chapel Road. I don't know if it's still there or not, but... So I used to manage the shop. They'd bring the meat in boned out, and then we'd have to cut it up, and I would have to cut it up. And they'd come in for, say, 6 or 7 pound of meat for their dogs, massive greyhounds. And they'd buy the meat, and I'd wrap it, and they'd take it away, and they'd have biscuits and God knows what there for them, for the dogs. So from then...
So did you make a lot of money in that? Well, it wouldn't have been big turnover, would it? What kind of living did you make?
Oh, I can't remember, really. Must have been reasonably well for me to stay there. Yeah, it must have been reasonably well. Because money wasn't a lot big thing in those days. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
20 cents with this, with 2 shillings, then that was a lot of money in those days. As I say, we paid 4d/2 for a loaf of bread delivered to the front door. And I can remember particularly that Mum was taking us to the show, and we asked Dad for some money to spend, and he gave us 2 shillings to spend. My brother had asked for money, he'd give him £100 for the weekend to drink.
So you really felt the difference with being a woman in the family?
Well, I suppose so. He basically thought we weren't worth it. Child labour, I think, all them years.
Difficult for, you know, back then, very different, difficult for women back then.
Yes. Yes.
It only really changed with my generation, and that was only, and still there was remnants of that thinking,
yeah.
But yes. So tell me about the love affair with hubby. What happened with the romance? When did you meet him? In a pet shop?
No. I was still working there. Dad used to follow very interested in horses, he was. He used to have gymkhanas. Right, and he used to ride well in the bending races and race and all these flag races and all things like that. So then he started following the horses down at race horses. I said, no, what's the fun? Yes, race horses, I think. And we used to go to, we were going to Burragorang, to the races down at Burragorang. We missed it. We was going to the races. He'd go to the dogs or the races, and mostly the dogs. But this time we were going to Burragorang, to the races down there. Someone had a horse. It was going to be very good or something like that. And we were driving along the road and to there, and up near Narellan, there was a soldier on the side of the road bumming a ride, and it happened to be Barry. He was going to Burragorang because his brother, Kelly, was going to ride the horse at the races at Burragorang, at races. So he we took him down there, and his brother got thrown off the horse and got injured and sent back to Camden in an ambulance. So he went back with him in the ambulance to Camden, to the hospital. Then on the way back from Camden, he was living at Gledswood. Their house was up on the water races behind Gledswood. And we happened to pick Barry up on the road back again. And Dulcie Teagle was with me at the time, another friend of mine. And I said, "That's the man I'm going to marry." She said, "Don't be silly." I said, "Yes, it is. That's the man I'm going to marry." And it was love at first sight for me. But he was still in the army. So he started to write to me, and then he started to come to the dances, and he'd ride his bike down from, he'd had a push bike and rode it down from the water canal near Gledswood there and come down to the dances, and we got to know one another like that. And yes.
Was it a happy marriage?
Oh, unbelievable.
Isn't that great?
Oh, absolutely beautiful marriage. He was wonderful. He was really a wonderful man. Yes. Because I hadn't had much to do with I mean, Dad was rather a abrupt man, never showed any feeling or anything like that, but Barry was so different. Adored him, you know, and the kids, his own kids, that unbelievable. So, but he got out of the army and he wanted to learn a trade. And because there was such a wait, he wanted to learn to be a mechanic. Because he'd done mechanic in the army, he used to take all the big trucks from there to Darwin and things were all over the place. And he wanted to be a mechanic, but there was such a wait to learn to do this that they decided he could perhaps do a bricklaying course. So he did a bricklaying course and he went to stay with his cousin in Punchbowl, and he'd come home every weekend and go back up to his father's, his bike at our place, and go up to his father's for the weekend and then come down to the dances and that. So yes, very happy marriage.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what year were you married?
Married in 1948. Got engaged in 1947, got married in 1948.
And you were, what happened, you left that house then?
Yes.
Well, hopefully you didn't live in the house.
Yes. We left, we got married at Mascot. Because I hadn't kept up in religion and that, I had to get confirmed.
Was that the Catholic
religion? Yeah, yes.
I'm going to ask you to stop moving your hand in front of the microphone. Sorry. It does affect the sound quite a bit, actually, when I hear it.
It's
okay.
Yeah. Because I hadn't been confirmed, I had to get confirmed, and my sister and brother-in-law were with the Catholic Church, and they knew all what had to be done. So we went down. I went down then and was confirmed from Catholic Church just round the corner from Doherty Street. Can't remember what it is now. And then Barry had to take lessons, you know, to be a Catholic, because they asked him to turn religion. And I said I wouldn't ask him that, because I think it was wrong. And we were married at Gardiners Road, Botany. No, it wasn't Gardiners Road. Botany Road. There's a church there opposite the airport there. I don't think it's there now. We were married there, and then we went to live with my sister at Mascot from the April till the December, because we'd bought this property, and while we were waiting for it to go through legally, and well, Tommy put up two rooms to live in, we'd come up here every weekend and stay at Mum's and come over here and work on the house, the two rooms. So that then we moved out in December 1948.
And you've been in this house ever since?
Yes, ever since. It was two rooms. We built on the back. We put a veranda and a laundry on the back. And The laundry was a bathroom laundry combined. But first, before we had the laundry on the back, I used to wash them with the tubs around the side of the house and cart the water away in the buckets. And then that was in 1954, we put the front part on the house. That was another bedroom, bathroom and lounge room and hall. Then later on, we took the back part off the house, the laundry and the veranda, built another bedroom and the dining room on the back. So that was just before my son was born. And then 86, I suppose, Mum decided she had a unit in Liverpool. She decided she couldn't live on her own, so she sold it and she gave us money each to my sister and myself. We built two rooms on another bedroom on the side and another, supposed to be an office there, on the side there, and because I had my own mother living here, my husband's mother, my daughter and two children living with me.
Her children, your grandchildren.
Yes, and they've been here since Bradley was either 5 or 7 months old and Graham was just over two.
So how much did you pay for the house and land?
And the land we paid £22 an acre. That was £66. And our rates were £3, 3 and 4 pence. They went up to £6, 6 and 8 pence. Then they went to £12 something. And then they went to £24. And then they went to £48. Then they went to £76. And it just went on. And today, my rates are $2,001.
A year.
A year.
Do you know what council you... Did the councils change?
No, it's still Camden Council.
It's always been Camden
Council. Always Council. Always been Camden Council. Yes.
Okay.
We moved in here and there was no line. We only just had the two rooms. They weren't lined. We had no electricity on. But
lots of candles?
No, not really. Not candles.
Kerosene
lamps, yes. And a fuel stove to cook on. So you have to get your kindling in the night before. And Barry used to get up and catch a bus at 5:20 in the morning. We didn't have any transport. And then he'd get home at 7 o'clock at night and do that every day.
Where did he work?
Well, after he finished his trade, he went to work with a man in Punchbowl. And he used to go to his place and from there to Punchbowl and then he'd go by his transport to the jobs that they were doing all over the place. He built a lot of houses around Reesby and all around there in as a bricklayer lot. And all around this area too, he did the co-op down the bottom, down here.
The Leppington Co-op?
Yes, he did the Leppington Co-op. He did the Rossmore shops out there. Not the original shop, but I think they had... It was the produce place in those days. He built that too. And he did the hall, the Leppington Hall, as a donation, like worked for that the 1956, I think that was done. And a lot of houses around here have been done by Barry. So he leaves his mark all around the area.
So... I mean, I know it's a big question, but just reflect on, you know, the change of the area. What's the significant changes over the years? For you, what have you seen that you want to talk about?
Well, when we were growing up too, as I said before, we used to go out picking peas and beans for a living too, and tomatoes, and all the growers around here, well, they'd know that we were doing these sort of jobs. It was the Northy Girls and myself. And as we'd finish one person's property, we'd go onto another person's property and pick the peas and beans and the frosty mornings, you know, riding your push bikes to these jobs, and up on top of the hill up there in Denham Court, where the big tanks are up there now. There always used to be only one tank up there then, but there's two tanks there now. And we'd pick pick and peas on top of the hill up there. And Barry came with us a few times, and he couldn't believe we could do this for a living. He was lying down between the aisles of the peas and beans because he couldn't carry on. But we were used to it. The way that's changed, well, there was no... Even out the front here was only a dirt road out here. And I've seen the bullock trays go up this road. And the bus used to go up this road too, and the branches were hanging over the side of the road, you know, and you'd hit the side of the branches as you go past. And in the night time, talking about what we did in the wartime, we'd go to the pitchers in Liverpool, and you get the pitcher bus in, and they'd wait for you to come home. But the army buses you'd see there, they'd come around the top of the main street in Liverpool. You'd think they're going to tip over. They were so crowded with the soldiers, you know. They were hanging out the doors everywhere. But around here, it changed. You'd see the migrant families coming into the area, you know, and the school kids over there at the school. And as I say, I went to Leavenworth School, and Janet went to Leavenworth School. Barry went to Leavenworth School, but I never met him there. He'd gone by the time I left, by the time I'd got there.
So Barry went to the same school as you?
Yes, yes, his brother's Robert. He was one of the first pupils at the Leavenworth School.
But you didn't know Barry?
No.
Until you laid eyes on
him? Yeah, that's right.
That fateful...
Yeah, I met his brothers. He had two younger brothers, Stanley and David. I looked after them when they first went to school there, not knowing that I was going to go into their family and all those.
Isn't it funny how those things happen?
Yes, it is.
You don't quite meet the brother, and then...
They used to come to school in the horse and cart. The mother used to drive them down the horse and sulky before they were old enough to bring it to school on their own, and then they'd tether it up the paddock, and then they'd drive it home. So they reckon they were real little demons, that they used to drive the horse and cart into the dam opposite the hall. There was a great big dam there. They reckon it was bottomless, but it was a good watering hole for the horses. Anyway, but none of them was fenced down there in those places either in those days. But and the roads were bad, really bad around the back streets, you know, and even down the top of Carnes Hill up here. I can remember going down there in the back of the Northeast truck, and the front wheel come off, and when one of the ruts, and you could see the wheel going down in front of us, in front of the truck. We were lucky we didn't turn over. And I remember Mum and Dad coming home with them in one of these muddy roads. You'd dread the rain because you knew that you're going to get bogged, or the trucks were going to slide all over in the roads around the back streets. It was unbelievable, the roads. But they're all surface now. They're much better now. Mm.
What were the main... So it was, I mean, obviously the market gardens, the sort of the vegetables that were grown here, the poultry... Do you remember seeing the poultry sheds going up?
Well, improving on them, yes. Across from the school, it was the Bordovichers, Mary had... George, I don't know where he brought Mary out from Yugoslavia, or Serbian. We always thought they were all Yugoslavs, but I remember him bringing her there, and there was hardly a little old house. It all had dirt floor right throughout, and I was went to see her after she'd had her first baby, and I was at school there then. We were the cleaners of the school, one of the Northy girls and myself. We got paid 8 guineas a year to clean the school, to sweep the school out after school. We saved that up. We bought a push bike each with us. So, but the poultry farms, you could see them go a bit, but they were a very old type poultry farm, then the bigger and bigger ones. So I can remember Mary having one baby, I think, in the tomato patch over there.
And was the Teagles the chicken people?
Yes, oh yes.
That's your friend who was ended up being the Teagles.
No, that was not Top Teagles. Well, we used to call them Top Teagles and Bottom Teagles, but the Top Teagles were the one that had the all the chicken farms up the top. Mrs. Teagle used to play the piano for the dancers sometimes down there and for the concerts. She was a lovely person too. Yes.
What about the Inghams? Do you remember them?
Well, when before I came to Leppington, the Inghams, we used to walk out to the Inghams farm because Dad used to work for Ashcrofts and Pierce's, and they had the pig farm out there. We're round about where Kmart is now, I think. So, yes, we used to walk from Liverpool out there to the Inghams thing. A friend of Mum's used to, her husband worked for Inghams, and there was a, they lived on the property out there, one of Ingham's cottages. We went to stay there once too. So,
So what if you were a housewife with bringing up your kids?
Yes, yes.
And did you have any hobbies? What did, like, I mean, I don't know, what, how do you spend your time today? And does that reflect what you've been doing for a while? Or?
No, in those days, I had a big garden, a lot more garden than I've got now. And Barry go off to work, and I'd fill in a day around here. I might have had a little poultry farm out the poultry shed out the back with a couple of chickens or something like that, but I can't remember much about them. Yes, we did up in the original fowl yard, it is with the tree, isn't it? But by the time we mowed the lawns and did your garden and did your washing and everything like that, the only way that we could go out was go out in the bus. You'd perhaps want groceries, you'd hug them with you with your baby on your shoulder, you know, on your hip, and come home like that. So,
did you get a lot of fresh produce from around the place?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, you had good neighbours. You know, they had anything, they'd pass the tomatoes over to you and back and forth. But I had a good vegetable garden in those days here at home too. Barry was very vegetable garden minded. We used to grow lots of things, and that's why all the fruit trees are out there too. But
you've got ducks here.
Yes, I've got ducks. Yes.
What do you like about the ducks?
They're very intelligent. You don't think this, but by gee, they're intelligent. But it's just a hobby. It's just a hobby, you know, looking after them. It gives me exercise. It keeps me on my toes all the time. There's always something to do with them. But, we've got cows too, so we've got dogs. The boys have got fish. We used to have canaries and that, but he'd gone out of them, but he's starting with his canaries again. So.
And how long have you been a member of the bowling club?
My husband's a foundation member. Therefore, his number was 71. We used to run gymkhanas. No, had barbecues, I beg your pardon, in the bush alongside, I think, where the top bowling green is now. There was a paddock there. We used to have barbecues there to raise money to buy the, to do the building of the first part of the bowling club. And he volunteered to do a lot of the work there then too. They got paid to do a lot of the work too in the second part of it there too. So his number was 71. So when he passed on, I took his number 71.
And how did your husband die?
Oh, he had heart problems. He'd had five-way bypass. He'd been a smoker all his life. And he just, heart problem and bad circulation problems. I was a school canteen supervisor for 20 years. At the age of 40, I went to work. I hadn't driven a car for a long time. I'd paid my licence all them years, so I bought a little prefect for £400, and I taught myself to re-drive again so as I can drive to school every day. I did the lunches and that voluntary for many, many years, and then the department built a canteen And they gave me, reckoned that I'd been doing it so long that I was entitled to the job. So I started up there at 87 cents an hour. I was there for 20 years. So
what school was that?
Leppington School. So they named the oval after me, the Joan Peck Oval. So because I'd been in PNC since Janet was a baby, and right through Greg's, and then through the boys when they grew up there. So long time, since 1938 till 1987, involved with the school.
It's quite a contribution, isn't it? Have you had your photo taken next to the sign? Is there a sign saying Joan Peck Oval, or is it just an oval?
Probably have, but I can't remember ever seeing them. I've been going through a lot of photos lately. I can't remember ever seeing them. It's probably at the school somewhere, but I can't remember. I know it was in the local papers.
I'll have to take you there and get a photo of you there, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
Not today.
No, not today. Another day, yeah.